You know, the thing about being in the shit, there's nothing worse than being in the shit by yourself, but at least everyone's in the shit. And you can take a little bit of comfort in that, I think. And there's always a worse story around the corner. We just, you know, I'm not about bottom lip dropping. I'm about, you know, being positive. Let's get on with it and we'll get through it.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. When the pandemic landed, New Zealand, our mates across the ditch, embarked on the elimination strategy. With a heavy lockdown model designed to completely eliminate the virus from its shores, they banded together and beat the virus. New Zealand is now considered virus-free. But what has the last 7 months been like for the residents and the hospitality sector? Al Brown is the chef and owner of Depot Eatery and Oyster Bar, Federal Delicatessen, and Best Ugly Bagels in New Zealand. Al, how you going, mate?
Bloody good. That was quite the intro.
Well, you deserve quite an intro. You're a pretty influential chef.
Oh, no, I was talking about the pandemic. No, it sounded so serious. And I guess it was pretty serious. And it all happened, I guess, you know, same for everyone in the world. Suddenly it was game on, no matter where you were. And Jacinda, I think she's extraordinary. Our Prime Minister made some big calls and closed the place down. And that first time it felt like the right thing to do. And we've had another flare up, but we seem to be on top of that as well. But it's been a pretty shit 7 months, to be honest.
Well, can you take us back and paint a picture for us of what it's been like in New Zealand when the lockdown first happened and what sort of impact it had on you and your establishment?
Look, from what I can recall, you know, it went from, them dealing with it and we jumped, we have a sort of system of 1, 2, 3, and 4 here, and we're all on 1 now, but we went from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, I think within sort of 3 days, 3 or 4 days. So it happened very, very quickly, which came as a bit of surprise. And I guess it's easier to close things down than to open them up. And we did it pretty quickly. I think we're all in a bit of shock, really. When we sort of knew that we were going to be locked down for at least a month, a lot of soul searching, and my first priority, I think, was the staff. I didn't know, health is more important than any plate of food, as far as I'm concerned. So I immediately went into, right, we want to, you know, we thought about maybe, oh, we'll do a bit of wholesale baking and distribute that around supermarkets and things to try and earn a little bit of income. But, you know, the first day of that, I just wasn't happy with how it was going to roll out. And we were still in those early days of, you know, wasn't scaremongering, but I was a little bit, you know, unsure. And you feel, you know, these are your other family. These are people that you spend more time with than your family. So there's a lot of care and thought went out to, it becomes more than thinking about your business. To me, it becomes quite personal. It was the thought of looking after my staff was first and foremost. You know, we're relatively risk adverse sort of business. Well, as risk adverse as you can be in this business, but we like to pay our bills and sleep well at night. So, you know, we were, and we've been established for quite a while. So, bit easier for us, I guess, to bite the bullet and switch it all off. And that's what we did. And immediately people were, you know, using the words pivot and we're going to do takeaways, we're going to do this, you know, counterless, you know, pickup, etc. And I'm a bit old and cynical, but I sort of thought, oh, well, I'm going to sit back and watch this for a bit, because changing the model is quite a big deal in a whole lot of ways. And we're not just a hunger and a thirst solution. You know, we're entertainment, and so much of the magic around a restaurant is, you know, the food and the booze and stuff is the vehicle for everything else. And I was, you know, I know, you know, the idea that you can, you know, it's hard enough to serve a delicious plate of food and, you know, from 5 meters from the kitchen to the table, let alone bringing in polystyrene or, you know, packaging and driving around and dropping off and picking up and payment and, you know, how do you staff that and, you know, what money drops out of the bottom, is it actually worth it? So we basically shut up shop and watched. And look, I don't know whether that's been the right way to do things or not. Once we started dropping down levels, you know, we were in Auckland, was in level three and level two for quite some time when the rest of the country was back at level one. And so we had, you know, social distancing in the restaurant, and it just makes you cry. You know, it's just, the product is just not the same. It's and that's what I mean, getting back to restaurants and cafes, and, you know, there's so much more than just the product you're serving, and hard to create that magic and when the restaurant's half full, because it just feels so bad, it feels so wrong, you know. And you still really need the same amount of people in the kitchen and single servers, etc., to run it. So, you know, getting, you know, keeping morale up, it's a big deal. You know, I work a couple of nights on the floor and depot and fed in the week if I'm around, and of course I'm around now. And you know, again, it was, once we were sort of back and serving in different levels, it was a matter of, you know, keeping the troops rallied, I think, more than anything.
You mentioned some of the amazing decisions and direction that your Prime Minister has given the country during this time. The Australian government's copped a lot of flack for not supporting international workers on visas. What's some of the support that the New Zealand government gave to the restaurant industry?
Oh, we had, you know, we had subsidies straight away, which is about 80%, and that was extended for a certain period of time, and they've finished now. But that was, you know, and those were, you know, Jacinda made some serious calls immediately, which, you know, I guess stopped the fear mongering a little bit and made sure everyone could keep their head above water for a while anyway. So, you know, that was super important for us to, you know, as I say, for us, you know, because it's also not just a thing about us with our staff, it's about how the staff feel about being in the pandemic as well. So, you know, to know that we could, we looked after everyone, didn't lose anyone. And that was, you know, that was because of the government and what she did. And yeah, can't, you know, and it's so hard, you know, my heart just broke with what was happening in Melbourne and, you know, that big outbreak. And, you know, people going, oh, you know, bloody Prime Minister, close it down, it's time we opened up, etc. And, you know, and then they would be the same people that would be yelling and screaming at her if we had an outbreak like Melbourne did. And, you know, so you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know. It's like, but health comes first for me, I think. And, you know, the idea of you know, locking it down and trying to stamp on, you know, and get on top of it. And we're kind of lucky too, Huck, that we're, you know, we're New Zealand, we're bottom of the earth, you know, we're surrounded by water, in a lot better position than in the world topography than a lot of other countries, that's for sure. And so is Aussie, I guess, as well.
Well, New Zealand is an amazing country. It's a beautiful place to visit. Can you tell us a little bit about what New Zealand cuisine is?
Look, yeah, I mean, I get asked that quite a lot. I think, yeah, well, only, you know, it's kind of a tough question, isn't it? And but I can give you my sort of version. I guess the thing is with New Zealand and in our food, and certainly my career starting off, you know, my favourite magazine was always, what's that Australian one?
Gourmet Traveller.
Yeah, and I used to open those and just sort of think, oh man, you know, Aussie's just that much further ahead and of us, and I think we've, you know, we've sort of closed that gap over the years when we've realised what we had here as well. But we always looked across the ditch. Well, I certainly did to that magazine especially. But you know, the New Zealand food scene, We should own informality. I think we do informality really, really well. I think we find ourselves. I'm not a fine dining guy, and I did that for a little bit. I opened a restaurant called Logan Brown years ago. It's still going, and that's in the fine dining sort of realm. But I always sort of felt relatively uncomfortable in that position of white tablecloths and fine glassware. When I started cooking, I used to think, oh, you know, I need to be like the French or be like the, you know, the Michelin stars and all that sort of thing. And so that's what I did fine dining to begin with. But it just, the jacket didn't fit really. And I found it, I sort of felt that we always were trying to be like someone else. And yet now we've gone through this transition of we're actually comfortable who we are, and actually informality is just as hard to nail informality or an informal restaurant as it is as a fine dining restaurant, because if you don't nail it, you're looked upon as lazy pretty quickly. So that ability to make things look very casual and, you know, not so polished, but everything arriving as it should is quite difficult, in a casual environment. But getting back to your question, you know, I think I'm about doing as little to the product as possible. I don't cook in plastic bags. I don't have any I've never cooked anything in a plastic bag in my life. And I don't have twinces or pincers or whatever those, or schmears and bits and pieces. But I respect the people that do, of course. But New Zealand food's about getting it to the plate as quickly as possible and doing as little with it as possible. I think, obviously it's got to be well cooked and well seasoned, but so much of it is about, you know, I don't want something that's, been played with and turned into, because I think smoke and mirrors happens a lot when the product isn't that good, because that's the only way you can get it to visually eat well, I guess. But, it's about, and it all sounds so cliched, but, you know, getting the product from the land or the sea to the plate as quickly as possible, and letting the product sort of do the speaking itself. And, you know, a few little twists and bits and pieces along the way. But, you know, we're blessed with beautiful food and over here, and beautiful product. If it's a plate of Cloudy Bay clams, you know, just do it like it's been done around the world forever and a day. You know, splash of wine, hit of garlic, a bit of chili, you know, some lemon juice and butter. And, you know, then the product's going to do the talking. And, I think I'm not about, not trying to recreate the wheel here. I'm just trying to just do food that people like. You know, to me, it's the vehicle for everything else. That's really what it is. It's the vehicle for fun and happiness and people having a good time. And again, that informality is a massive part of that. I want, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're black, white, gay, straight, fat, skinny, rich or poor. You know, you walk into any of my establishments and you're all the same. And you'll be all treated the same, and it's in a fun, convivial place where you actually don't even need the music on. There's so much bloody noise going on, and that's my soundtrack. You know, people having a good time, you know, and not feeling uncomfortable.
You've always had an amazing connection with produce. You actually grew up on a farm. Can you tell us about those days, and then how you got into cooking?
Yeah, I did. I grew up on the farm, and I wasn't really connected to farming so much, to be honest, but I loved the outdoors and, I loved the, I had a rifle in my hand from a very early age and would roam the hills and shoot rabbits for mum to cook, and ducks and bits and pieces, or go eeling, and I loved all that sort of side of it. It was funny, sort of. I used to read lots of cookbooks, and there were always, famous chefs waxing on about their amazing upbringings with their, you know, they'd walk down the garden path and pick basil with granny, and she'd sit on the bench and would make pesto together, and the, you know, mortar and pestle, and all, you know, and all these duck confit and bouillabaisse and all these amazing sounding dishes. And I used to feel quite deflated going, shit, we didn't have any of that. And but funny, the longer I've been in the game, I realise it doesn't matter where you grew up. You had an incredible, most people had an incredible, and you can't judge one against the other, upbringing around food. But we had a, you know, we had a pretty substantial veggie garden, and, you know, that was just normal. And we had a few fruit trees, and, you know, we had two herbs, mint and parsley, and they seemed to do us just fine. And, you know, I was fascinated by, you know, as a kid, used to watch, you know, because we'd have to kill the dog tuckers for the dogs on the farm on every Monday afternoon in the killing house, and then we'd kill the muttons or the hoggets for the workers and for our family to eat through the week. And I'd sit there and watch that happen all, you know, so I was connected to that sort of thing from a really early age, and I could name all the bits of offal because we never wasted anything, and you know, I learnt to skin, kill a sheep at pretty early age and hang it all. You know, so I love that. I always sort of said if I didn't end up cooking for a living, I would have probably ended up being a butcher. I love that sort of meat fabrication and breaking down animals or fish or anything. I still love that sort of side of things. But, you know, we used to have, we'd go to the coast for our holidays to a little place called Castle Point. We had a caravan there, and you know, that was a magic time of the year where we would change our diet from, you know, eating a lot of lamb and a lot of mutton and a bit of beef to eating seafood and diving and eating what we call power, but abalone, and, you know, digging for pipis and tuatuas and crayfish, and, you know, setting the net, and, you know, so you know, a lot of, it's interesting, isn't it, but a lot of what we take for granted, I don't think we realize how amazing that was, how New Zealanders have grown up with all these things that just seem to be part and parcel of living in this country. And, you know, we all travel to other parts of the world to, you know, to eat in a 200-year-old trattoria in Italy by a beautiful, you know, Italian waiter, and, you know, with all the accent and all that sort of thing carrying on, and we think it's so amazing. But I think we forget, you know, and look, it's certainly happening now is that people, you know, you can hop off a plane in New Zealand and, you know, you can drive anywhere, and within an hour you can at low tide get cockles in the sand or tuatua or anything like that. And and, you know, the hills are full of wild game, and yeah, there's a lot of, you know, just a lot of things that we should be proud of, I think, as a country, that, you know, that's our informality, our generosity, and you know, cherishing what we have. And and you know, people talk about trying to take New Zealand food to the world, and I'm like, oh fuck, forget that. Let's keep it, you know, let's they can fucking find it. You know, we don't need to take it to them. Let's keep it for ourselves. But yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, most New Zealanders travel, and that's why we've got a really, you know, got incredible chefs here in New Zealand, and especially the young ones that are really into it. And they travel and they bring back all these ideas, and, you know, we have a pretty cool industry here now, you know, that feels pretty grown up and dare I say it, you know, world class, along with, you know, a lot of other countries.
You mentioned that fine dining's not really your thing anymore, but you made a real name for yourself with Logan Brown over many years. What was that period of time like?
Look, it was, as I say, I thought that that's what I had to do. You know, so often you pick a career and you want to be good at it, and I thought that that was and probably is still the pinnacle for many people, but fine dining. I found it. I just found it a bit soulless. I just, you know, I couldn't stand degustation. I couldn't stand these long periods and people explaining things and talking to. No one wants to fucking know about the terroir of the fucking wine. You know, they just want to drink it, you know, and have some fun and talk, not stop being bothered. And that's, you know, I thought that that's what, and then it was a, you know, I did it for 10 or 12 years. And then I eventually went, I've got to be true to myself. And this is, you know, I feel uncomfortable doing this style of food. And Logan Brown won, you know, lots of awards and bits and pieces, but it always, for some reason for me, just felt a little bit, you know, I'm proud of my days there with what Steve and I did. And look, Steve's still got it, it's still going, and it's over 20 years, so it's a huge achievement anyway. I just, you know, once I made the break and realised that I still love the game, but I wanted to embrace our, you know, depot was all about embracing informality, and I kept thinking about, if I was going to do a restaurant, what is it about, you know, eating that I like, and where are my memories that seem to be the best ones, and it always came back to sort of campgrounds or what we call batches over here, which are sort of humble holiday homes, and where anonymity kind of reigns supreme, and you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a high court judge or a freezing worker, you know, everyone's treated the same, and you'll drink wine out of a jam jar if that's the only vessel that's left. And so those were my memories. So it was, you know, it sounds blasphemy, but how do you commercialize that feeling or that thing? And I wanted to serve wine in tumblers, and I wanted to have wine on tap, and people were saying, oh mate, you'll go bust in 6 weeks if you do that, and I was like, well, fuck, we still serve wine in a plastic cup at 30,000 feet and people seem to drink it. At least I'm serving it in a glass. And, you know, I was proven right, you know, it was, you know, to, yes, I understand people who are, you know, into their wines and want to sniff and smell and swirl and beautiful glassware, but I'm a big believer, people just want to take the top off and they know the fun will come, you know, and it's, that's sort of that whole breaking down informality and making people feel comfortable. I'm fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by, you know, how you, even from making a reservation or walking up to a restaurant, the sense of arrival, you know, people, you know, standing over the threshold or stepping over into someone else's area or even knocking on someone's door, even a friend, when they open the door, you know, how do you make that person, even if it's, you know, your best friend, feel comfortable as soon as they step into your space? And you know, and the thing with and that's where I get back to campgrounds and all these places, no one cares what you are, it's who you are, and being able to make people feel comfortable as quickly as possible. And you know, that at depot we, you know, we don't take reservations, and we haven't, and you know, people have a bit of a moan about that, you know, but they're the, if you need to eat at 7 o'clock, we're not your place. But you know, and I say, you know, like when you have people around or go to someone's place for dinner, you don't walk in the door and sit down and start eating. You have a drink for you know, 40 minutes, an hour, or more before you even, you know, so this whole having to eat at these times, again, it's breaking down the formality. It's making it informal and fun, and, you know, and, you know, I was intimidated coming to Auckland to open, to open depot. There's some comparison, I guess, and you know, Auckland's a bit like Sydney and Wellington's a bit like Melbourne, I think. That parallel gets drawn a few times. But so I was quite intimidated to come to the big city, and you know, I'm not a the things that I pride myself on is that I can't stand snobbery or you know, don't you know who I am sort of people. And And we had those people turn up to the restaurant early, and it was kind of, no, I don't know who you are, and it'll be 40 minutes. And they never came back. But what I did learn, is that you reap what you sow. And we pride ourselves on kind, happy, friendly service, and everyone's treated the same. You know, we don't talk about back and the front of house. We just have one house and we're all part of it together. We try and break that down the whole time too. And, you know, I remember early on, or the first year, you know, I was waiting on some tables, and I was always say, oh, you know, thanks for waiting. Now we'll wait on you. And this guy goes, oh, well, mate, back. Bloody nice to meet you. We always come along here, and we don't mind the wait. We don't look at our watch anymore. We count the carafes, and tonight was a 3.5 carafe wait. You know, and that's, you know, that's an A-class customer in my eyes. You know, it's that sort of, you know, they embrace that it's not, you know, they come along and it's part of the fun is hanging out if the table's not there. Once you get the table, it's all yours, and you sit down, you have ice water, you have a koha, which is, I'm not sure what the French term for that is, you know, when you get something free when you start, what do they call that? I can't remember. Anyway, you know, so you, yes, a moose bush. Koha is Māori for gift, so we call it a koha. And, you know, so getting people down on the seat, they've got ice water in them, they've got bread, they haven't even paid for anything, and they're already eating and drinking. You know, those are the important issues to me, is to make people see people let go as quickly as possible. You know, it might be like they're on a first date, it might be like they've been talking up the restaurant, it might be, you know, so they've got this certain amount of anxiousness about them that comes in, and it's our job to dissipate that as quickly as possible. And you know, we don't, you know, the main food at depot, and I talk about depot a lot because it, you know, if you have a depot in your life, you're a bit lucky, I think, although, you know, maybe you earn them and have been in the game a long time. But you know, it's we do secondary cuts mainly, and you know, we have an oyster bar, and so we shuck everything to water, etc. And, you know, we serve wine and classic French tumblers, and the music's a bit noisy and it's a bit chaotic, but people love it, and they can, you know, it's just making people feel comfortable. And if informality is our deal in New Zealand, that's what we're about. And, you know, you don't need to be able to pronounce the French wine, or, you know, we hardly have any of those anyway, but yeah, it's just a place that is, you know, that we make people feel comfortable and as quickly as possible, and that's the magic of it, I think.
You mentioned that the restrictions haven't allowed you to capture the true energy of your restaurants because there's restrictions there and spacing. What is the state of the industry there at the moment, and do you think it's changed because of these circumstances?
Oh, look, I think it has. You know, what's also happened, certainly for Auckland, you know, COVID hit, but we're also in the middle of sort of the city's getting an underground rail network put in, and so the city's a bit broken at the moment. There's cones everywhere, you know, the middle of the city, it's hard to get around, you know, traffic's a nightmare. So that you know, and even then, bloody truck blew over on the bridge the other day, and that put the bridge out for a bit. And so we've been hit with a lot of things, and so, you know, and people are, it's a funny time in a sense that there's so much uncertainty. And, you know, on one hand, people are going, oh, you know, you've got to get out there and support all your local people and your local restaurants. Well, that's great if you've got a whole lot of money, but if, you know, your wife's just lost her job and you've got a mortgage, and, you know, these are times to be a bit more frugal, and we shouldn't, you know, my thoughts again too is, you know, as much as I want everyone to be in the building, you know, because half the people are working from home as well now, so, you know, lunch trade is pretty much non-existent, but it's a real uncertain time, and as I say, you know, people have to be a bit more frugal and going out. The the other thing that's sort of happened too because of COVID, now that we've come out, there's been about five or six new restaurant openings in the last week or two, maybe even more, eight. So they all were in the planning before COVID hit. And then they all, you know, then COVID hit, so everything sort of stopped. And I guess everyone worked behind the scenes, but as soon as it came down to level one, they've all bloody opened at one time. So that's kind of tough as well for everyone. And but, you know, because they're paying, you know, what it's like to open a restaurant, the money just, you know, pours out of the place. So, you know, people with big rents have got big dreams, and, you know, the punters are coming back, but you know, not in the numbers, and shit, we miss the Aussies. So no, can't believe I'm saying that. But we, you know, we've always had a great Aussies love the rest, you know, when they come over for business and that Trans-Tasman travel. We miss the tourists a huge amount as well. So it's slimmer pickings, you know. What do we do? We just have to be smarter, and, you know, again, it's all about cost centers and, you know, drilling down on everything. You know, we've always, our mantra has always been relatively, you know, have a pretty small menu and you know, that sort of thing. And as I say, we sort of cook, you know, the special needs vegetables and the secondary cuts and all those sorts of things that you know, you can get a little bit of sort of I guess profit out of them if you do it smartly and well. So yeah, it's just the way it is now, and you know, we'll get through it, but it takes a bit of time.
You briefly mentioned how you're missing the Aussies, which was really nice to hear, but with international travel in question and New Zealand doing the elimination method, but many countries not, how are you feeling about international travel and that reliance on tourist dollars? But also, you like to travel as well. You even filmed in Australia, filmed TV shows.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's the thing is, you know, how long's a piece of string? Are we, you know, is this... Are we halfway through this, or are we 10% into it? I don't really know, you know. And as I say, you know, closing things down is relatively easy. Opening up is a whole nother ball game. And, you know, you think of all those planes parked up and all the air, you know, it's not that simple, is it? So even if there is a vaccine and we all they find a cure and we can, you know, it's still going to take quite a long time to open up. So it's a, you know, I guess it's certainly on tourism, it's an opportunity, I think, to look at our industry and maybe shape it a bit better on a more high net sort of tourist people that are coming out, you know, rather than, you know, all these freedom campers and that sort of stuff that are, you know, kind of clog it all up and we don't get good value out of them. And, you know, this is a precious little country and, you know, we should look after it like that. And you want to come here, it's, you know, I think the higher valued tourists are the way we should be going, because, you know, we're not, you know, we're a great little country, but we've got to look after these, you know, these tourist spots and you know, and certainly the restaurants. You know, we're encouraging, obviously, New Zealanders to travel within New Zealand, and they certainly are. You know, there's lots of people. You know, the school holidays, the regions have been doing relatively well. Most of anyone who lives outside Auckland fucking hates Auckland, so I think it's the last place they want to come to. We're a bunch of tossers up here. But you know, they are. You know, we've got the America's Cup coming, but again, that's not going to have anything of the, you know, what we thought, the millions that it was going to be bringing in, that's for sure. That's just so that's going to be interesting to see how that goes, and people are still a little bit gun shy of going out. You know, we had the test match yesterday with you guys and Wellington, which was an absolute ripper of a game. But, you know, there was still, you know, I would have thought that would have sold out, but didn't sell out. You know, and that to me can only mean that people are still a bit gun shy about being in, you know, spaces where there's lots and lots of people. So, and that flows down into the restaurants as well. You know, when we got back to level one after the first 5 weeks of lockdown, I was like, sweet, fuck, everyone's going to be bursting to get back and have some fun. Shit, stood there, you know, restaurant half empty straight away. You know, it took ages, took quite a while for that to warm up again and get, you know, and we got up to probably about 80% of what our normal sales and busyness was before we went into lockdown again. And it's come back a little bit. We went back into level one last Thursday and it certainly was, it's, you know, I think people are, you know, wanting to get out there a bit more. Or anyway, it seems to have come back a bit quicker this time. So, but you know, if we go down, if we go down into another, you know, the first one was kind of, you know, adrenaline. Wow, what's going on? You know, this is a pandemic. What does that mean? Look after our staff. Close it down. You know, and it was kind of, you know, on a personal scale, I really enjoyed the 5 weeks of mucking around and cooking at home and going for walks and that sort of thing and sitting by the fire. And, you know, even though the businesses were hemorrhaging, there was an upside to that. So, you know, I get the, you know, the one thing that sort of came out of that is, you know, we're always so bloody busy the whole time that, you know, busy people being busy seems to be a badge of honour. Well, I'm kind of not that way anymore. And I'm 55 and was looking at taking my foot off the accelerator a bit, and you know, and what COVID's done is kind of like knock those plans out for another few years. You know, it's like, oh, got to pick ourselves up again and keep pushing on. When I was thinking, oh shit, we're going quite well here. You know, we've put in a long time building the brand, and the bagels are going, you know, the restaurant's going great, and now, so that's a little bit disheartening, of course, but. You know, the thing about being in the shit, there's nothing worse than being in the shit by yourself, but at least everyone's in the shit. And you can take a little bit of comfort in that, I think. And there's always a worse story around the corner. And so, you know, we just, you know, I'm not about bottom lip dropping. I'm about, you know, being positive. Let's get on with it. And we'll get through it. That's the main thing.
How have you felt personally during this time? Has this experience changed you at all?
Yeah, look, I think it has in a sense of just, you know, as I said, just sort of mentioned, you know, this constant trying to do so many things and it's brought back a little bit about what's important. And, you know, I have two daughters, one's 21 and one's 19, and, you know, I've sacrificed a huge amount of my life, missed a lot of sports days and prize givings and things, and so the human side of things, you know, about slowing down and what's important and stop bloody and try saying no a bit more. You know, the mental health issues, fuck, you know, I put my hand up in that area as well. I see a therapist, I have for 4 years. You know, I'm adopted, and you know, I've carried quite a bit of angst around me around that. That sort of, you know, morphed in the last sort of 6 years, and so, yeah, the mental health side of things, and sort of seeing some clarity around what's really important, and that is, you know, a bit more of a balance. That sort of that badge of honour of you know, chefs, you know, going and working and European or English kitchens and being, you know, starting at 7 a.m. and working till 11:30 at night and 12, you know, 6 days, you know, I think that's, and, you know, and that was, you know, that he-man sort of, you know, if you can't handle it, you know, get, you know, I can't stand any of that. I've never been, I can't stand being worked at, under intimidation or anything like that. But I think that this idea now, and you know, and the mental health in our game is a very serious thing, and it's got to be addressed, and we've got to understand that somehow, you know, we have that, you know, I tell all my employees that, you know, life outside the kitchen or the restaurant is should always be more important to you than what's inside the restaurant. And if you're having a, you know, if I can, you know, if your karate class is, you're learning, or you're writing poetry or collecting butterflies or something, if your class is on a Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, well, let's try and make that happen. And so, you know, that ability to step back and go, what's important, and make people, you know, the only way we're going to keep people in our industry is if we look after them as people and treat them how we'd like to be treated. And, you know, and that's, all my success has come down to, without question, you know, the people that I've surrounded myself with, and how I've, I guess, looked after them or worked with them. And that's the secret to success, I believe. And that's what it's about. It's you know, to try and get longevity of, well, you know, longevity in our industry. If someone's worked to me for 5 years, it's probably time they left anyway, but they've given me 5 years of their life. Holy shit. You know, that's unbelievable. You know, when you think about things like that, the dedication of people, and obviously they've enjoyed it if they've stayed that long and they've grown as well. But I certainly feel indebted to, you know, these people that have given me and made me look good and helped me create my sort of vision or what I wanted to create in business. And I take a huge amount of pride in now, especially, you know, when you're getting in your late 50s and things, you've got, you know, you've got dishwashers that worked for you 20 years ago that have, you know, two or three restaurants, and they're just, and, you know, there's a huge amount of pride in seeing, you know, and seeing your DNA in their dishes and their food, or their, or the way that they run their business, or the way that they look after their staff. And you know, that's, I find that really, really rewarding. And you know, there's a lot of that's happened in the last sort of 5 or 6 years. And to, yeah, to celebrate these great people that have worked for you and given you so much, and then to see them successfully go on and know that you've been part of their upbringing or part of their learning, and now they've got their own successful businesses as well. And that, you know, and I think that that's the hospitality game. You know, it's basically full of licorice all sorts. I think that's what, you know, the thing that I got into cooking, because I suddenly realized that, shit, you know, there's no seats in the kitchen, there's fire everywhere, everyone's got a knife, it's fucking yelling and screaming, and out of it all, this chaos comes these beautiful plates of food, you know. And so it's creative, but it's just such a, you know, I've always, you know, the thing about hospo, it's team, it's always team. And you know, it's like playing tennis, you know, you win in singles, it's fun, but you win in doubles, it's way more fun. So to be able to celebrate each night, or, you know, the end of the week, and have had a, you know, you've been into war with your team and got through the other side, and to see, to generally see people, you know, and we have a lot of staff that come through that are, you know, casual in their training to be lawyers or doctors or whatever. And we get a lot of that in our Pacifica kids that come through, and from the islands, and they come in and they're quite shy, and they start as food runners and move up to waiters. And to see these people blossom in an environment like a restaurant, and then go on, and you realize that even if they are doctors and lawyers, what you've taught them about life is communication and about structure, and you know, there's a whole lot of things that you, again, even if they're not in the game anymore, your DNA from the restaurant has helped them in their career in another way. And that's all those sorts of things I get a big buzz out of, for sure.
Well, Al, it's always amazing to catch up and talk. You're an incredible person, and your restaurants are a testament to that. Thank you so much for joining us on Deep in the Weeds. Keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me on.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers, and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.